Cape Talk. Cape Talk. A world view from London with Adam Gilchrist.
Morning, Adam. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm not going to be pedantic, but I'm pretty sure it's La Vue du Monde, isn't it? Anyway.
It is. No. Be pedantic, because I caught myself as it came out of my mouth and I was like, it's not Le Vue, c'est La Vue. Yeah, thank you very much for correcting me. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you know what I've done now.
My grammar Nazi did the same thing in my brain. What?
I've cursed myself now. I'm going to make all sorts of grammatical errors in the next couple of minutes, aren't
I? You see, now this, and you're going to be doing it in your home language. Now it's going to be awkward, Adam.
Touché.
Just teasing. Let's talk Thailand.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, that music can absolutely make the difference. I mean, we know that, for instance, in Uganda, Bobby Wine, the singer, could become president. We know that Tattoo caused consternation in Russia at one stage. The girl band, remember them?
What has
punk music done and rock and roll originally? Well, here we are in Thailand, and an extraordinary movement, really, that's growing around a group called Rap Against Dictatorship. I mean, their name is not subtle, is it?
But
this particular band of rap artists has taken off. One of the group, called Hockey, that's his nickname anyway, he says they're trying to highlight the problems within the political establishment of Thailand, both before the coup and after. They have three aims. They're making no bones about it. It's not just about good music to get on down to. Their aims are the resignation of the Prime Minister, a new constitution, and reform of the Thai monarchy, which is always a tricky one to get involved with. They began in July, and their records are selling, if I can still use the term records. Their lyrics and videos, they were ruffling feathers. The latest video was banned by YouTube, which I suppose often, any kind of ban often helps a band's street cred, doesn't it? But they're demanding change, and they've become quite a center of a movement amongst teenagers and young adults in Thailand, apparently.
Wow, interesting stuff. Well, that's a very dangerous place to take on the monarchy, but if they're brave enough, let them do it. And as you say, much like Tattoo, they rise in these places where repression is quite a big deal. Let's talk about these goal celebrations with respect to footballers.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. There are grown men who like to hug and cuddle and occasionally kiss each other because they kicked a leather sphere into a net. It happens. But we're being told they're setting a bad example. And two English MPs, Julian Knight and Clive Efford, have basically lambasted Premier League footballers for breaking the rules and enjoying normal goal celebrations. The MPs call it brainless. They call it an insult to Britain's National Health Service. And indeed, in the last few days, we've seen goal celebrations from players from Manchester United, Manchester City, Tottenham, Fulham, etc. The new rules for top-flight footballers in England are that, quote, unnecessary contact should be avoided at all times. But, Rafilwe, I put it to you, scoring a goal or a try or taking a wicket, it's that sudden rush, isn't it? The elation, the peak.
Yeah.
Is it possible or sensible to try to outlaw that? I've always had a problem within football that you can get into trouble for taking your shirt off to wave it round your head. I've always thought, whoops, as an expression of excitement and just pure exaltation, what's the problem? But there we go.
Yeah. I mean, droplets are the problem, I guess. But it's one, yeah, I would find it difficult to hold myself back as well. But then I'm a big hugger. So let's talk about this person who's done...
A natural footballer.
Right. Let's talk about this discarded fortune by this Welshman. Why would he throw away millions?
Of course, he didn't know he had at the time. Yes, this is a man. He had a laptop hard drive, and he was having to clear a load of stuff out from his, I think it was his office at home, but anyway, from his office. And he put a load of stuff in the rubbish to be taken off to landfill, including a laptop. We're kind of told not to do that, aren't we? But still, the laptop was there and the hard drive was within it, and it's been buried for 8 years or so. Now, what he discovered fairly quickly, this guy called James Howells, is that on the computer, because he was contacted in another way, I guess an email or something, he knew that he had bitcoins. He hadn't thought about them because he bought them for next to nothing 12 years ago or so when they were first invented. But soon after throwing them away, he was informed that he had £3 or £4 million worth of bitcoin. Fast forward 8 years to now, he's been asking the council if he can go to the landfill site. They've said no. He's asked if he can send some experts. They've said no. Now he is begging them and offering them 25% of the value because the bitcoins on that hard drive and contained nowhere else are now worth £210 million.
Jeepers.
Finding
the
hard drive. Oh, well, you know what landfill sites are. They just fill up, and then they put the earth over the top and gone forever is the theory. But could he possibly spend millions to try to get to it? And if it's there, would it work? Questions. But wow. Now think what the council could do with it. You know, suddenly a quarter of that £210 million as he is offering them.
Certainly. Big deal. I would pay a lot of people to get the $200 million on the other side, but that's just me. Adam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for that worldview.
Thank
we'll
you.
Catch up with you next week. Have a great weekend.